It doesn't start with a headline. It starts with who you make eye contact in a meeting, whose idea you echo, whose you let fade. It starts with the chair you don't pull out, the comment you don't challenge, the assumption you don't even notice you made. Bias rarely announces itself. It slips in sideways, small, quick, familiar. But small doesn't mean harmless, and micro doesn't mean minor. One drop of water doesn't erode a stone, but 10,000, over time, it carves a canyon. That's what happens with bias in practice. Not one grand act of injustice, but layers of being spoken over, of being second-guessed, of being just overlooked. Death by a thousand cuts, each too small to cause outrage, but together, they rewrite your worth. When people think of discrimination, they imagine one moment. A slur, a slap, a shouting match. But bias shows up in rhythm, in who's consistently promoted, who's called a natural, who's assumed difficult, whose mistakes are forgiven, and whose are documented. Bias isn't a fire. It's a slow leak, harder to see, just as damaging. They didn't mean it. It was just a joke. You're too sensitive. Intent isn't everything. Microaggressions are the splinters of everyday bias. Small comments, offhand gestures, words that land wrong but cut deep. Like asking, "Where are you really from?" Or saying, "You're so articulate." Or mistaking someone for the other person of their race in the office, again. They're called micro, but the impact is cumulative. She shares an idea in the team meeting. Silence, nods, no traction. 15 minutes later, someone else repeats the same idea, slightly louder, slightly whiter. And now it's brilliant. Nobody notices the theft, or worse, they do, and let it slide. This isn't sabotage. It's unconscious alignment, gravitating toward voices that feel more valid, more leader-like. Exclusion doesn't always look like a locked door. Sometimes it looks like a forgotten calendar invite, a private joke, an after-hours conversation you weren't part of because we didn't think you'd be interested. It's not always malicious, but it always matters, because when you're constantly left out of the small things, you're eventually left out of the big ones too. Watch how we distribute grace. Some people get to mess up and be seen as human. Others mess up once and become a liability. Some get feedback. Others get written off. The difference? Not always competence. Sometimes it's just bias and who we unconsciously expect to succeed. You need to be more assertive. You're coming off too strong. You're not showing enough initiative. Feedback can be true. But it can also reflect more about the giver than the receiver, especially when that feedback contradicts itself based on gender, race, class, or style. Bias doesn't just shape how people behave, it shapes how that behavior is interpreted. Look at who takes the notes, who mentors the interns, who organizes the birthday cards, who calms the tension in a tense meeting. This is emotional labor. Often expected, rarely acknowledged, and overwhelmingly carried by women, caregivers, or people of color. The work that keeps the room functional often keeps its carriers unseen. Bias doesn't need to be loud to be effective. It just needs to keep things familiar, comfortable, predictable. Because challenging bias means disrupting a system that already works for some people. That's why even small pushes for equity can trigger big reactions. Not because they're unfair, but because they threaten comfort. Hiring managers say it all the time. She's not the right fit. He doesn't have the right energy. They wouldn't mesh with the team. What they rarely say is why. Because fit isn't about skill. It's about similarity. It's about culture. And too often, culture means people who already think like us, which means difference gets filtered out before it even enters the door. Studies show that women, especially women of color, get interrupted more often in meetings. Their points are redirected, their ideas are borrowed, their tone is policed. This isn't rudeness, it's power. Being able to speak without interruption isn't a courtesy, it's a privilege. In teams, some people are trusted by default, given autonomy, given space to lead. Others, they have to earn it, over and over and over again, even when they've already proven themselves. That's not about capability, that's about credibility and how unevenly it's assigned. When you're the only one in the room, you're not just representing your opinion, you're carrying your whole demographic. If you speak up, you're always making it about race. If you stay quiet, you're not adding value. This isn't participation. This is performance under surveillance. So pause. Look at the last week of your life, not the headlines, the habits. Who do you defer to? Whose voice do you quote? Who do you instinctively believe? Who do you gently correct? And who do you let slide? Bias lives in those rhythms, and awareness starts by hearing the beat. But I didn't mean it that way. That sentence gets repeated every day in offices, classrooms, homes. It's a shield, a plea for grace. And sometimes it's true. Your intention was kind. Your tone was neutral. You didn't see the harm. But impact doesn't wait for permission. It lands whether you meant it or not. And if you only defend your intent, you'll never understand your effect. Some people hear, "That was hurtful," and translated as, "You are a bad person." That's not what's being said. Correction isn't condemnation. It's information. It's an invitation to look again. But bias hates being seen, and the ego hates being wrong. So we resist when we actually should be listening. You don't have to stage a revolution. You can just pause. When someone's being interrupted, say, "Let them finish." When someone misnames a colleague, correct it gently. When someone tells a harmless joke, ask, "What do you mean by that?" These aren't confrontations. They are recalibrations, small acts that say, "I see what's happening, and I won't let it pass untouched." You see it happen again. A junior team member gets stuck taking notes, or planning the birthday party, or smoothing out the manager's poor communication. You say nothing, because it's always been this way. But always isn't a reason. Try saying this, "Let's rotate roles next time," or "I think their skills are better used elsewhere." That one sentence can change the script. People fear this work because they think it will make them feel bad. But that's not the point. This isn't about guilt, it's about clarity. Bias clouds your vision. It makes you miss potential, misread intentions, misplace trust. Seeing clearly isn't a punishment, it's a gift. When you stay silent, people notice. Not just the target of the bias, but everyone watching. Silence sends a message. This is normal. This is safe. This will be tolerated. You don't need a speech, just a sentence, just a raised eyebrow, just a pause that says, "Not here." A colleague makes a joke. It lands wrong. The room chuckles nervously. You don't laugh. You don't perform disapproval either. You just look down, stay quiet, stay still. That too is disruption, a refusal to reward the familiar rhythm, a gentle interruption of comfort. And sometimes it's enough to make the speaker rethink the punchline. You don't have to be the target of bias to interrupt it. In fact, that's the point. If only the affected speak up, the system stays uneven. Use your position, whatever it is, to shift the weight. You don't have to fix the whole room. Just tilt it, just a little. You didn't create the system. You didn't write the script. You didn't choose the frame. But now you're in it. And how you move, how you speak, listen, pause, has ripple effects. Bias isn't your fault, but equity can be your choice. This work will make you uncomfortable. Good. Discomfort isn't danger, it's growth. It's friction at the edge of your worldview. If you never feel awkward, you're probably not changing. The more you shift your behavior, the more people will notice. Some will thank you. Some will question you. Some will resist. Let them. Because every time you act with intention, you give others permission to do the same. You create a crack in the rhythm. And sometimes, a crack is all it takes for light to get in. The jokes you laugh at, the resumes you skim, the voices you amplify, the assumptions you let pass. All of these are choices, and every choice sends a signal. This is acceptable. This is valid. This is how we do things here. So ask yourself, what are you normalizing, and who is it helping? You don't have to shame anyone. That's not the goal. Interrupt the pattern, not the person. Focus on behavior, not identity. Because the truth is, most bias isn't rooted in hate. It's rooted in habit, and habits can be broken. Bias work doesn't always feel dramatic. It's not about grand statements or explosive reckonings. It's about paying attention. It's about choosing differently, again and again and again. The real work happens in the repetition, the microshifts, the mundane. This is quiet resistance, and it builds. You don't need to change the world today. Just today's interaction, today's comment, today's assumption. The big picture is made of small brushstrokes, and the culture is made of choices. So start where you are, because when you shift the rhythm, even slightly, others start to move with you.